It is now in order to consider Amendment Number 47, printed in Part B of House Report 113-117. What purpose does the gentleman from Wisconsin seek recognition?
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment at the desk.
Clerk will designate the amendment.
Part B, Amendment Number 47, printed in House Report Number 113-117, offered by Mr. Kind of Wisconsin.
Pursuant to House Resolution 271, the gentleman from Wisconsin, Mr. Kind, and a member opposed will each control 10 minutes. Chair recognizes the gentleman from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield myself such time as I may consume.
Gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I offer this bipartisan amendment with my friend and colleague, Representative Petri from Wisconsin, that would call for further reforms and tightening up the crop insurance program. By the steps we take with this reform amendment, we've saved the American taxpayer over $11 billion over the next 10 years. It was based on bipartisan legislation that Representative Petri and I offered earlier this year that was supported by Representatives McGovern, Sensenbrenner, DeLauro, Radel, Blumenauer, Conyers, Cooper, DeFazio, Connolly, and Waxman, and supported by a variety of outside groups. What we're trying to do is maintain an element of risk in farming again in a fiscally responsible manner by tightening up crop insurance programs that we feel have become too excessive with the shifting of Title I commodity money and direct payments into the crop insurance category. We'd save over $11 billion over the next 10 years by doing the following. We call for a limit of federal crop insurance subsidies to $50,000 per farmer per year. Currently, there are no limits. No cap on the amount of taxpayer subsidies going to farm entities. Last year alone, over 26 entities received over $1 million in taxpayer premium subsidies alone. We think that's wrong, and we're trying to correct it with this amendment. We'd also extend the adjusted gross income limit of $250,000 per farm entity to apply to crop insurance programs. The concept there is simple. If you're a farm entity with a gross profit of over $250,000, you really ought not still be receiving taxpayer subsidies. This is after you back out the operating expenses, the expenses of doing business. We're talking $250,000 worth of profit. It would promote crop insurance company efficiency by ending the 100% government subsidy of the administrative and operating costs that the private insurance companies currently enjoy today. Last year, we spent over $1.3 billion to these insurance companies just for their A&O expenses alone. We're asking them to live with a total spending of $900 million, which is consistent with what the Obama administration is offering in their budget. This would also guarantee that the crop insurance companies do not pass along the riskiest policies back to the American taxpayer, which is currently the practice. It would lower the profit guaranteed to these private insurance companies from 14% to 12%. We don't offer that type of guarantee for any other business in anywhere else in the country. And yet now they're guaranteed a 14% profit. We're saying, can you at least live with a 12% profit for the sake of some savings within this program? But also promote transparency to help the taxpayer know where the money is going, who's benefiting from it. It opens the sunshine up so that we have greater disclosure of these programs and therefore greater scrutiny. So we think this is common sense reform. We think this is something that maintains the risk management tool of crop insurance. We're not proposing eliminating it, but we're just trying to propose making it more market sensitive and maintaining that element of risk. And finally, one of the reasons we feel this is so important is because of current commodity market prices, there's great pressure on farmers now to plant everywhere in the most fallow, highly sensitive, highly erodible land, because they know if they experience any loss, their loss is covered, and therefore the risk is taken out of it. That's leading to bad stewardship practices throughout our country. And with this reform, we're trying to introduce that element of some second-guessing, some risk in the most fallow, unproductive land that's right now being brought back into production. So I would encourage my colleagues to support this amendment, and I reserve the balance of my time.
Gentleman reserved. This is the gentleman from Oklahoma rise.
Mr. Chairman, I rise in opposition to the amendment.
Gentleman's recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to the subcommittee chairman of primary jurisdiction, Mr. Conaway of Texas, 2 minutes.
The gentleman is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chairman, appreciate the yielding. I rise in strong opposition to this attack on a very important piece of the safety net that production agriculture relies upon. There are two possible outcomes for this amendment, and both are bad. The first is we're going to put the government back in the business of delivering crop insurance. We've tried that. It didn't work. The government employees don't act nearly as responsible as the private sector does. That comes with a cost, but it's the farmers that like it. They get response from these folks that's appropriate. The second, we'll go back to the possibility of the days when we would spend billions of dollars on unbudgeted ad hoc disaster relief. And that's the least efficient way that we ought to go on about this, and that's what this amendment does. It is bad for taxpayers, in spite of my colleagues' comments. This amendment won't save money. It'll end up costing us untold billions in this ad hoc disaster spending that's the norm in that regard. I know that the Environmental Working Group and other radical environmental groups want to run our farmers and ranchers out of business. I get that. This amendment would certainly help them accomplish their goal. So if your aim today is to stick the American taxpayer with billions of dollars to pay for ad hoc disaster bills, this is your kind of amendment. If you want to give the extreme environmentalist group, the crowd that gave us meatless Mondays, a win in their effort to ruin American farming and ranching families, this would get right at it. So I have farmers and ranchers struggling with 3 years of successive and severe drought. This is a slap in the face of those farmers and ranchers in West Texas and across this country. This amendment is not good, and I urge my colleagues to vote against it.
Gentleman yields back.
Mr. Chairman, I yield myself 30 seconds. Unless my good friend wants to include the National Taxpayer Union, Taxpayers for Common Sense, Citizens Against Government Waste, Americans for Tax Reform, Committee for Responsible Taxation, American Commitment for the Center for Individual Liberty, R Street, Competitive Enterprise Institute, in that category of radical environmental groups, they've all come up in support, endorsing this legislation. But we're not taking the private insurance companies out. We're just asking them to carry some risk and to reduce their guaranteed profit margin from 14 to 12. And with that, I'd like to yield 1.5 minutes to my good friend and colleague from Wisconsin, Representative Petri.
Gentleman's recognized for 1.5 minutes.
Thank my colleague for yielding. As the House considers the Farm Act of 2013, I believe it's important that we offer the proper support for farmers while ensuring that these support programs are responsible for the American taxpayer. As you may know, the Federal Crop Insurance Program is the most expensive government program supporting farm income and is the only farm income support program that is not subject to some form of payment limitation or means testing. This amendment, which incorporates the language in the Affirm Act that Representative Kine and I introduced last month, works to reform the crop insurance program. Capping crop insurance subsidies at $50,000 per person per year does not prohibit farmers from purchasing crop insurance, nor does it eliminate all taxpayer support for the program. In fact, most farmers would not be affected by this cap at all. According to the GAO, in 2011, only 4% of farmers would have been impacted by this $50,000 cap on subsidy for insurance. For 2001 to 2012, the total cost of premium subsidies jumped fourfold from $1.8 billion to $7.5 billion. The Congressional Budget Office projects even higher costs in the future, averaging $9.1 billion annually. The subsidy cap, combined with the $250,000 means testing requirement, will assist in preventing fraud, waste, and abuse in the federal crop insurance program. This amendment also reforms administrative and operating reimbursements.
Thank you. Gentleman's recognized.
The government pays to private insurance companies by capping those payments at $900 million, which is a fairly moderate cap and below what's currently being spent. It also lowers the reimbursement to insurance companies to the president's target of 12% return from 14% return.
Is the balance of his time?
I reserve the balance.
Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to the gentleman from Arkansas, Mr. Crawford, 1 minute.
Gentleman's recognized for 1 minute.
I thank the chairman. The farm policy is intended to provide support when needed based on production. U.S. farms have been forced to become larger to increase efficiency and remain competitive in the global marketplace. Arbitrarily limiting policies ultimately limits the ability of farms to grow and gain efficiencies, thereby penalizing U.S. farmers and putting them at a distinct disadvantage to our global competitors. Adjusted gross income is different than farm profit. There are a number of expenses that must be covered. In addition to personal expenses, farmers must service debt. Given the cost of today's machinery and land, can easily reach into the millions. AGI rules penalize spouses who oftentimes take off-farm jobs to help make ends meet when farmers are struggling with their farm income. An unreasonable AGI means test creates uncertainty for growers and their lenders by creating a ping-pong effect of being eligible one year and ineligible the next, making it difficult or impossible for lenders to measure with any certainty the future cash flow of thousands of farm and ranch families in order to make both short and long-term lending decisions. And shortly, in short, an unreasonable AGI means test would make U.S. farm policy unpredictable, inequitable, and punitive for thousands of American farm ranch families.
Gentleman from Oklahoma reserves. Gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, how much time do I have?
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to yield 1 minute to the gentlelady from Connecticut, Ms. Delora, champion for family farmers and for the nutrition program in the Farm Bill.
Gentlewoman is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you. I rise in support of this amendment, strong support of this amendment, because it aims to reform a broken crop insurance program. This is a program where taxpayers foot an average of 60% of the premiums for beneficiaries, plus there's the reimbursement of the administrative and operating costs, 100% of those efforts. These are for private companies that sell the plants, including multinational corporations, some of whom trace back to companies who are in tax havens. And essentially, what it does, it works to improve crop insurance. It limits taxpayer-subsidized profits of companies that sell crop insurance. It does not harm the ability of the companies to sell these policies in any way. It would ensure that taxpayers do not continue to subsidize these administrative and operating expenses. It's a bipartisan amendment. It enjoys broad support from a number of groups across the political spectrum, as has been laid out. It caps the amount of crop insurance premium support individual producers receive. GAO said that the cap would have affected just under 4%. It will shine. Thank you. Crop insurance is the only farm support program subsidized by taxpayers and not subject to a payment limitation. This would bring this in line with other farm programs, and it would shine a little long overdue sunlight to the crop insurance program. And yield back.
Gentleman reserves the balance of his time. Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Mr. Chairman, I yield 1 minute to the gentleman from Georgia, Mr. Barrow.
Gentleman's recognized for 1 minute.
Mr. Chairman, I thank the gentleman for the time. I rise in opposition to the amendment. The people I represent value American agriculture and understand that food doesn't grow on grocery store shelves. It takes the hard work and high risk of farmers to get that food to market. I believe all of those farmers are worth supporting. This amendment will undermine the safety net for many of those farmers, large and small. Many people don't realize it, but farm operations are made up of as many different kinds of farms as people. Different farms have different sizes, different ownership structures, different crop mixes, and different equipment. And that diversity makes our domestic farming portfolio strong. It's often the big guys who act as the hub of a farm community and offer the smaller farmers in the area access to expensive equipment that they could never afford on their own. These are all family farms in the best sense of the word, and they depend on each other for their livelihood. This amendment effectively ends the safety net for the large family farmer, without whom many of our small family farms couldn't produce. I therefore urge my colleagues to oppose the amendment. With that, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. The gentleman from Oklahoma reserve?
Gentleman reserves.
Gentleman reserves.
Mr. Chairman, what's the balance of time?
2¾ minutes.
And the gentleman from Oklahoma?
6½ minutes.
I'd like to reserve, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the gentleman from Iowa, Mr. King, 1 minute.
Gentleman is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your yielding also to me. And I rise in opposition to the kind amendment, and I do so because I don't want to see agriculture distorted. We've watched as equipment's gotten larger, farms have gotten larger, and when you start locking this thing down and tying it to an AGI, what you really have is a means test for the first time. It pits neighbors against neighbors. Here's what I remember. Back in the 80s, when we had a farm crisis and we had a real disaster, I saw on the front page of the paper come out $26 billion in farm subsidy, disaster money to deal with drought and the climate that we had and the bad economic climate. We haven't had those calls. 2011, we had a big flood. No calls for disaster money. 2012, we had a big drought. No calls for disaster money. Crop insurance is working. 86% of the crop is insured today. I recall it being 13% back then when I saw the $26 billion bill hit the headlines in the Des Moines Register. So I urge opposition to the kind amendment, and I yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman yields back. Gentleman from Oklahoma
Mr. Chairman, I wish to yield 2 minutes to the ranking member of the House Ag Committee, Mr. Peters. The
gentleman's recognized for 2 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for yielding. You know, what this amendment is going to do is undermine the crop insurance system and take a whole bunch of people out of the crop insurance system that we need to make it actuarially sound. Now, it was just said here that there's no other program that doesn't have a payment limit. Well, let me tell you something. Mr. Kind is co-sponsor of the Goodlatte Scott dairy provision, which has no payment limit. And the 6,000 cow dairies in Mr. Kind's district are going to get $600,000 of benefit from our subsidies in the dairy program, and there's no payment limitation. So come on. You know, if you really believe in payment limits, why isn't it on the Goodlatte Scott scheme? You know? This amendment undermines everything that we've been trying to do in the Agriculture Committee. We had the biggest disaster last year, drought, that we've ever had. We had no significant call for an ad hoc disaster for the first time that I can remember since I've been here. And the reason is because crop insurance worked. You know, agriculture is working. In my district, you know, we have 3% unemployment because agriculture is working. You know, the one part of the economy that's actually working, and all these people that want to create jobs and want to create government programs so we create jobs, they want to take the one thing that's working in the country and screw it up. And I'm not going to be part of it. So vote no on this amendment.
Gentleman yields back. Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Mr. Chairman, how much time do I have left?
Gentleman has 2 3/4, and the gentleman from Wisconsin has 2 3/4.
I yield to myself, Mr. Chairman, 2 minutes.
Gentleman's recognized.
The ranking member makes very valid points. When you look at the way federal crop insurance works, it shifts the risk from the Treasury to the private companies, to the reinsurers, to the farmers and ranchers. If you look at how these premiums and payments have gone over the last decade, not just the really tough weather last year, you'll find that in reality, 70% of the policies over the last 10 years have not returned one single penny. 70%. And if you look at how the program has worked in the 7 years prior to the onset of the drought of 2011, basically the federal government actually made money on federal crop insurance. Now, I can't help the anomaly that the super drought was in the Midwest, but I can tell you that's a pretty good track record. The ranking member's entirely right. It works. Let's not mess up something that works. With that, I reserve the balance of my time, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman reserves. Gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I yield myself such time as might consume. In response, and to my good friend in Minnesota, my average dairy herd size in western Wisconsin is 125 cows. I don't have to make up dairy operations in that, so we'll have plenty of time to debate the supply management, federal-run supply management program that he's been advocating within the Farm Bill, which I think will be a disaster and won't work. But to my friend from Iowa, we're not talking about eliminating the crop insurance program. This risk management tool will be in place. It won't touch 96% of the producers out there. But the last time I checked, we're running some record budget deficits, and there are areas in this farm program, especially in crop insurance, that we can go to for sensible, common-sense savings that's economically justifiable while maintaining risk within the program today. And it's a little ironic that we have such defenders of this crop insurance program when last year alone the typical insurance company received $1.46 in taxpayer subsidies to every dollar that went into the pocket of our farmers. And 5 of the 10 biggest insurance companies offering these programs are foreign-owned entities. And as the gentlelady from Connecticut just pointed out, many of them are using tax havens on the taxpayer dime. And how they can get up here and justify this program with a straight face is really beyond me. And with that, I'd reserve the balance of my time.
Gentleman reserves. Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Mr. Chairman, I yield the remainder of my time to the gentleman from Illinois.
Gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to my colleague, Chairman Lucas. Thank you to Ranking Member Peterson. We agree. Crop insurance is not broken. And I stand here today to remind my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that recently Secretary of Ag Tom Vilsack sat in our Ag Committee hearing and said crop insurance is not broken. Crop insurance is one of the most successful programs we have in the Midwest, if you heard in this debate. We see that we're not doing off-budget disaster assistance. We see that farmers are willing to give up direct payments to have better risk management tools like crop insurance. Let's also get to the point, too, that bankers, our creditors, will not give loans to our farmers and keep our family farms in business without a strong risk management program like an effective crop insurance program that we have. I urge all of my colleagues to oppose this amendment. We need to ensure that this risk management tool, crop insurance, stays as viable and as effective as it is. And I stand here today and agree with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and agree that crop insurance is not broken. Please oppose this amendment. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Gentleman from Wisconsin.
Chairman, how much time do I have remaining?
1.5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to yield to my good friend, the gentlelady from Maine, 1 minute, Ms. Pingree.
General Lady is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Mr. Kind, for giving up some of your valuable time, and I will try to be quick. First, I want to thank the Chair and the Ranking Member. They've worked hard on the Farm Bill, and I appreciate many of the good pieces that are in this bill. But there are a lot of unconscionable cuts that eat deeply into the working poor in this country, particularly the SNAP benefits cut, SNAP benefits, which is a means-tested program. And I want to rise in support of this amendment, because unlike the cuts to the SNAP benefits for low-income families, this amendment just asks the richest agricultural business in America to pay a little more and receive a little less. Just this one portion of the amendment, the $250,000 cap for farmers that clear more than $250,000 a year. We have a lot of farmers in our state and a growing number of farmers in our state, but there are very few that clear more money than that. This mostly affects corporate farms. 96% of the farmers will never be affected by this amendment, but for a very few, this is a huge benefit. I yield my colleagues to support this amendment, and I thank my colleague for his time.
Gentlewoman yields back. Gentleman from Wisconsin.
I believe the chairman has the right to close.
Yes. Gentleman has the right to close and does still have time.
Yes. No. Mr. Chairman, let me close by saying that, listen, I understand there's a lot of hard work that goes into the committee in producing a farm bill. Now, I get that. But there are areas of cost savings that we can justify to the American taxpayer without jeopardizing the risk management tools. Crop insurance is ripe for that type of reform. And again, what we're offering and what we're sending out is very common sense, economically justifiable, and would save the American taxpayer over $11 billion over the next 10 years. And if the average taxpayer knew just how this crop insurance program is set up today, they'd be aghast in horror. It's not right. And we're trying to correct that right now by maintaining the safety net and a viable crop insurance program that can work. I encourage my colleagues to support the amendment.
Time has expired. Gentleman from Oklahoma.
Yield myself whatever time I may have yet. I would just simply say to my colleagues, the system works. As my colleague also noted, it is critically important to farmers to be able to secure their financing. And while ultimately, like most provisions of the Farm Bill that raise the food and fiber, the consumers at the end of the chain benefit from the highest quality, most affordable priced food and fiber in the history of the world, please protect this important resource to production agriculture. Please continue to enable farmers to farm. Vote no on this amendment. I yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman yields back. The question is on the amendment offered by the gentleman from Wisconsin. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The opinion of the chair, the noes have it. The amendment is not agreed to.
Mr. Chairman, on that, I request a recorded vote.
And that recorded vote coming Thursday morning. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.